Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Guess what? We're on time tonight. Isn't that a treat? It is for me, and I suppose at least you appreciate it. Today is Monday. Thanks for being here with us tonight. It is the 25th of July, and you know, I just can't, it just seems like the whole month of July just passed me by, like it was never here. I don't know about you, about the concept of time, it's weird. But anyway, it is the 25th of July in the year 2005, and our guest this evening is Alan Watt. Once again, I'm very appreciative of Alan coming on with us. I'm having some kind of a problem with my printer, and there's information I've been wanting to share with you folks, and I can't get it out of the printer, and Alan is kind enough to come on here and keep this broadcast rolling. Let me share our spiritual message with you. This is from the Course in Miracles out of the workbook. It is quite possible to listen to God's voice all through the day without interrupting your regular activities in any way. The part of your mind in which truth abides is in constant communication with Creator, whether you're aware of it or not. That makes sense to me. Alan Watt, thanks for being here tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Yep. Yeah? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So how's it been with you, and what's up?
Oh, just the very hot weather we're getting up here. And the spring, of course.
Yep.
Yeah, they announced that there's going to be a storm tomorrow, so I watched them make it, you know, spray it above me in preparation for the storm.
Yeah.
That's how down pat they have this.
So they're actually calling for the weather tomorrow.
Yeah.
So you're watching them prepare the skies for the weather that they're calling for.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, it's quite something to watch them just go from east to west, back and forth, and lay on this odd-looking... Well, you've seen it. It's like someone stuck their hand in candy cane and just pull out big strands of it.
You're talking about candy
cane. In all different directions.
Yep.
Yeah. And you see, some of them are different, plus the trails they leave behind them are spreading much faster than they used to.
Yeah, you're talking like cotton candy, yes?
That's right.
Cotton candy, the way you can wisp it out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And unlike normal clouds, they go in all directions and have these long curling tails on them. So it's like living in a science fiction movie, and like or maybe a horror movie.
Yeah.
Because like horror movies, most of the people involved don't know what's happening to them.
Yeah.
You know. That's the oddest thing about it.
I think I was telling you about this. I got an email, and somebody was kind of doing an overview on all the stuff that's going on. A quick one.
Uh-huh.
You know, the chemtrails, the food additives, the genetically modified food, the vaccines, all the new and unique and sometimes seemingly untreatable diseases, designer diseases. And
sure.
Then at the end of it, he says, gosh, it almost seems like someone's trying to kill us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And Helen?
Yeah, I mean, chemicals that should not be there are obviously ill, or make you ill. Anything that's not naturally in nature, especially in these concentrated doses, will eventually affect everybody. There's no getting away from
it. You were saying
because it's everywhere.
Yeah, and the people that call you you've talked to people from all over the country that so many of them or the people that they know are having respiratory problems.
Yeah, frequent, recurring too.
Uh-huh.
And some people are more prone to it than others as well, so it shows up on them more frequently and more obviously. A lot of people, you know, can carry these illnesses and pneumonias for even a few, 2 or 3 years before it really hits them. But the older they get, the more it takes it out of them, and so the more obvious it is. But the very young and the very elderly are coming down first. But it's also affecting all age groups. Whether they smoke or not doesn't matter, you know.
Right.
And people who are prone to allergic responses are coming down with it too.
Well, and how many people I have are...
So yeah, this is affecting. In fact, pharmacists across the country, from other people who phone me, they talk to the pharmacists, and I ask them to talk to the pharmacists. And it's like taking an informal study, because the pharmacists are going great guns with antibiotics right now to cope with the bronchial
infection.
Didn't
you suggest that people ask their pharmacist what is the most prescribed antibiotic today?
Yeah, well, the new one that they're dishing out by the handful or the bucketful is Biaxin, which
That's
is a fairly recent one, but I wouldn't really use that except as if nothing else works.
Uh-huh.
I'd use that. It's more expensive, too, than the regular antibiotics, and because it's fairly new, I don't think it has a generic supply yet.
So you're probably paying about
a patent for a while.
Yeah, you'll probably pay about $20 a pill for it.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not far off actually, with the dispensing fee. And the next most commonly prescribed thing for people who never had this before are the bronchial inhalers for bronchodilators. For people normally who have asthma, and now it's being used for people who are developing asthmatic symptoms later in life, and it's due to these chemtrails.
Yes, there are young people. It isn't just later in life, because
right.
There are several friends that we have that I know their children are,
mm-hmm.
you know, suddenly asthmatic and have never been asthmatic in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's happening more and more frequently. We'll never get a complete study, because I'm sure the governments are keeping a lid on it. But we know they're keeping a lid on the fact that they're even spraying. They won't even talk about it. But they're collecting all the data, I'm sure. And another sort of informal study you can do is to inquire from undertakers what the most common cause of death is today. And if their business is up, and it certainly is, and once again, it's persistent pneumonias. So this is affecting everybody from north to south and east to west.
Yeah. Gosh, Alan, it sounds like somebody's trying to kill us, doesn't it?
No, that's paranoid now, Jackie.
Paranoid.
They wouldn't do anything to harm us.
I'm just a conspiracy theorist.
Yes,
they
actually love us,
mm-hmm.
and they're just helping the aliens to take care of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I mean, not one single newscaster on regular media or a newspaper will even touch the subject. So they all know that... it isn't just losing their job, perhaps. It's maybe the fact they'll never work again, or it might even be more serious, that no one will touch the subject.
Well, they aren't allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they did, do you think the news is live? The news is pre-cut, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Everything is bits and bytes, and it's all censored, edited. If you look at the end of the newscast, which most people don't, just look at how many producers are there.
Yeah.
Editors, sub-editors, and so on, who decide what's to be left in and what's to be read over the airwaves.
And but in other words, what you're saying is that the whole show is produced, but you got the one person sitting there live doing their mm-hmm. scripting. And
yes.
I, so because I was thinking that if one of them dared to just come right out and tell the truth, it wouldn't even be aired. But, you know, maybe one of these days some brave person will just get up and say, I can't do this anymore. Right on the air, right live. You know what I mean, Alan?
It wouldn't happen because there is no such thing today as actually live. They have at least 20 to 30 seconds delay.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Mm-hmm.
So they cut that.
And they switched to something else right away.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it couldn't happen.
Everybody's been watched, you know.
Well, I got an email not too long ago, and allegedly, you don't know this, but it was somebody who said that it was a friend of theirs who worked for one of the networks.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it was, this is referencing the past presidential election. And, you know, there was next to nothing in the news about all of the vote scam that went on all over the country. But actually, it was the state of Ohio, where it was just totally, totally out of this world. In other words, in one precinct, using this as an example, let's say they had 85,000 people voting when only maybe there were only 30,000 registered voters in that precinct. It was just out of this world. And I remember, you know, watching that night. I flipped it on just before I went to bed. And this Ken Blackwell, who's the, you know, Secretary of State there in Ohio, he was saying, you know, it's going to be at least 10 days before we can get the vote in. And da-da-da-da-da. And the next morning, they were calling up for Bush. And you know what I found out? I've been doing some research on JINSA. That's the Jewish Institute for National Security.
Mm-hmm.
Jewish Institute for National Security something. Okay, JINSA. It's a Jewish organization. And they've got this board of advisors, and I was looking at their board of advisors. Ken Blackwell is one of the JINSA board of advisors.
Mm-hmm.
JINSA, in fact, I'm putting some of the information in the next chapter of the book, Jewish Persecution, because they just say it right out that basically what JINSA is for. I think between JINSA and AIPAC, Alan, they've got the U.S. government pretty well tied up. I mean, AIPAC controls the Congress because of their large amounts of money. They can, you know, get rid of a congressman if they want to. And JINSA is the advisor. And so many of the people that are part of JINSA, in fact, Cheney used to be on the board of advisors, Wolfowitz, I think it was in 2003, he was given the Man of the Year Award by JINSA. And they come right out in their mission statement, in their programs, and talk about that basically what their function is to work hand-in-hand with the U.S. And Israel for the protection of Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Ken Blackwell.
Yeah, these are huge, huge lobby groups as well.
Oh,
with tremendous funding. Yeah.
Well, and they've got a whole bunch of retired military admirals, majors, and et cetera, on their advisory board. It's really pretty sick. It's but you know what? At least it I don't know. It gives you a sense. At least, not more than a sense. It takes away any doubt whatsoever that the U.S. government is totally under the control of these creatures.
Well, I think the U.S. government was maybe set up for this very purpose. I always think of the symbols of the U.S. From the beginning. Actually, before the beginning, all the Masonic symbols are so open. These are ancient symbols going way back, you know, from to Sumer, actually, through Egypt, with the eagle, the symbol of Manasseh, you know, with holding the arrows in one hand and
mm-hmm.
the olive branch in the other.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you've got 13 fruit and 13 arrows in the U.S., the U.S. one, and the tribe of the Rothschild family has the same symbol, with five fruit and five arrows for the five sons of Rothschild, but it's the same part
symbol.
Of the coat of arms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there were the 13 original colonies.
That's right. And before that, you know, I've got an old book from the early 1800s with the coinage and the tokens they were using for money prior to the Revolutionary War.
In the colonies?
In the colonies. And this stuff about FDR putting the Great Seal, or putting the pyramid on the money, you know, with the all-seeing eye in the pyramid, this was done before the Revolutionary War, because if you check into the tokens that they were using and the money they were using prior to that, in the colonies, you'll see the same thing there. They were using the pyramid and all-seeing eye prior to 1776.
Yeah, well, Alan, the chapters of the book that I have been working on so diligently for the past week and a half, maybe it's been 2 weeks. I don't know. I've just lost time. Chapters 16, 17, and 18, and they're all ready to go over to Alan totally, or over to Darren. In fact, I've got him sitting there just ready to send over. This is exactly what was addressed in these chapters. Because chapter 16 turned into three of them, because first we were looking at the connection between the Talmud and the Freemasons, the Jews, and the Freemasons. And, I mean, it just leaves no room for doubt. And then the question came into my mind, actually after I finished chapter 12 of the book, about the Revolutionary War, because they constantly take claim, brag, that every single revolution that they were behind. So I got to looking into that, and there is absolutely no doubt that it was orchestrated and pulled off and paid for. This Haim Solomon, that is a big hero of the revolution. There's one of the bios on him from, I think it's called Wikipedia. It's a encyclopedia online. Wicca, W-I-K-K-I-A, or something like that. I thought of what you said about Wicca. But anyway, they come right out and say that he went over to France and got money from the Rothschilds to finance the Revolutionary War.
Yes.
And, in so many ways, how they were involved in this. And one of the pieces that I was excerpting from said that when the Declaration of Independence was written, it was sent to Holland via St. Eustatius. I think it's St. Eustatius, St. Eustatia or something like that. It was an island where the Jews had developed a long stronghold, and they were supplying arms and et cetera.
The gunpowder was coming in.
That's right. But here's what it said, that the Declaration of Independence was sent to Holland via the Jews from St. Eustatia. Is it Eustatia?
Yeah.
And that it was stopped by an English ship and confiscated, and that the Declaration of Independence had a letter along with it that was explaining the document, and it was in Hebrew. The letter was in Hebrew. And and then I found a piece on the French Revolution, and that was the last thing I added to chapter 18. Well, I started doing some research on Lafayette, got wondering about that guy. That was the French, he entered the war. He was a wealthy Frenchman. Came over, he actually, according to the bio, purchased the ship and put together a bunch of, I guess they were revolutionaries, actually. They didn't call them that. But Lafayette was a Freemason, and he was the Grand Master of the Grand Orient Lodge until his death. He came over here and helped, you know, whip the colonists into fighting shape along with his revolutionaries that he brought with him. Then he goes back to France. And then, of course, Benjamin Franklin was an ambassador to France. And for 5 years after that, so was Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson. And it said that after he went back to France, he kept very close contact with brother Benjamin Friedman and then Thomas Jefferson. And then it proceeded to say that, I forget the words they used, but basically he helped to foment the Russian Revolution, mm-hmm. and actually fought in it. And then again in 18, maybe it was 31, I can't remember the exact date, he actually led a revolution to take out the Bourbon, take down the Bourbons. So this was an international revolutionist.
Oh, yeah, it was international. Albert Pike wrote about it.
Yep, yeah.
And Albert Pike said that at that time in the 1800s, he said that we are behind revolutions. He didn't mince words about it. And he said that we never begin a premature revolution. In other words, they do all their groundwork first.
It takes
years to set up. They train the people to do exactly what they have to do. They go over every possible scenario that could occur and ways to defeat oppositions long before it even begins.
Yes.
And he said that's why they're so able to pull it off. And then he trained, Pike trained Joseph Mazzini, which is just Joseph Mason. That's what it means.
Oh, Mazzini.
Mazzini is Mason.
Uh-huh.
And he became the head of the World Revolutionary Party in Italy. And that became the Communist Party. Lenin took over from Mazzini.
And there was
a continuous thread right through the Scottish Rite of Freemason from Charleston, Virginia, you know, in the States.
There was, in the book that I excerpted from in Chapter 16, mm-hmm. was called The Cause of World Unrest, and uh-huh. it did mention that letter that Mazzini allegedly wrote. And
yep.
how they said that they were going to loose the nihilists and the atheists and,
yeah.
I mean, the bloody terrors that they were going to cause.
Uh-huh.
And it all has happened that way. And the thing that was amazing to me, I found this piece on the French Revolution. And in 1789, which is, of course, when the treasonous U.S. Constitution was being ratified here, during the Russian Revolution or the French Revolution or just before it, anyway, they came up with what they called the Declaration of Rights of Man and
yeah.
Citizens. Okay, well, guess who wrote that? Well, in the first place, this article, and I excerpted this in the last part of chapter 18. The article said, if you look at Article 1 of the French Declaration and you look at Article 1 of the UN Resolution, you see that they're almost identical, and Alan, they were. I went and looked
yeah,
them up and put them in there. And then, so I'm reading this French Declaration, and then you get down to the bottom and it says, the above document was written by Major General or whatever Lafayette and his good friend and neighbor, Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
So there we are. And then, of course, they said that a lot of it was based on the Declaration of Independence. Well, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, Alan?
Yeah.
It wasn't Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
It wasn't Thomas Jefferson. His name was put to it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've got the same damn language from back in the 1700s right up to 1948 in the UN, mm-hmm. it's the same creatures with the same plan.
Oh, there's no doubt this has been an old plan that's been worked down through the centuries to get to total control, and it's a scary kind of future they envisage, because it is total control. They don't believe in individual freedom. They believe in the collective, and they also, under the guise of, because they use communism, of course, to the extreme, because the final system, which we see right now, in fact, has a fascist elitist group at the top with a massive bureaucracy running the common people under a communistic type system, socialist system. So it's a combination of the two. And Lenin himself said there are three explanations to describe communism. He says there's one for the workers, which is very simple, because they must get the workers behind them for revolution's sake. And they will think that it's going to give them equal rights and so on.
Yes.
If then there's one for the middle management level, which is more detailed in the scientific socialism, which is very important. And then, of course, there's the actual real ones at the top who understand the agenda, and that is for those who deserve to rule the world, have the right, because of their intellect, superior intellect, they have the right to manage the lives of every single individual on the planet.
Wasn't Voltaire somebody that has been pushed out there like a great...
Yeah, Voltaire, they use a lot of, just like today, they use a lot of writers and novelists and so on, because most ideas are put across through fiction, because your guard is down and you enjoy the book, and you don't realize you're being programmed along a certain way. But Voltaire initially was from Switzerland. A lot of them came from Switzerland, these revolutionaries. Voltaire was groomed by a woman in Switzerland, a very wealthy woman. He had to leave there eventually because he was caught 3 or 4 times exposing himself in the streets to children.
Oh, geez.
And so they took him to France, and eventually Benjamin Franklin took over as the Grand Master of the French Orient Lodge, and he initiated Voltaire into the society.
Yes, he did. I read about that. Brother,
yeah.
And this was right from the Grand Lodge, the mm-hmm. ancient and accepted from Scotland, and it mm-hmm. was a piece on Freemasonry, and it told about all these wonderful people like George Washington and Benjamin Franklin and Voltaire and Lafayette.
Yep.
It told all their names,
mm-hmm.
but anyway, it told in there that when I think Voltaire was in his 70s, according to this, when he
mm-hmm.
was initiated into the higher degrees, and that
yep.
That Brother Benjamin Franklin, you know, did the rites and everything, and
yep.
then Voltaire touched the lamb's wool, the apron, to his lips with tears in his eyes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, when he did that with his apron, I guess he exposed himself again.
I guess he would have, wouldn't he, Alan?
Yeah. but no, there's so many perverted people in these societies towards the top. And of course, the ones down below don't know that, but they are. They're very perverted, and it's almost as though they're selected for that. People who have a grudge against society, or they're personally an outcast because of their preferences, are used to promote the agenda through writing, and today it's movies and so on. But this is an old technique. Benjamin Franklin also belonged to the Hellfire Club in England, and outside London, High Wycombe. And it's an interesting name, High Wycombe, from Wicca, you see.
Uh-huh.
And they had riotous orgies there. And the odd thing was, during the Revolutionary War, when Franklin was over in France, he traveled there every other month to London, and he got into London. No one stopped him. I mean, you'd think he'd be arrested. But he was allowed to come and go into London and attend these orgies at the Hellfire Club. And, of course, the actual Hellfire Club itself is still standing today. And about 5 years ago in the British newspapers, they renovated it, and they did take up the floorboards, and they found the remains of, I think it was 5 or 6 babies.
They were doing sacrifices.
They were either doing that, but they were doing more than that. They were doing selective breeding, because every Masonic club, high Masonic club at that time, had a type of brothel attached
to them. All right, listen, hold the thought. Don't lose your train of thought, because we have to take our break. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with Alan Watt. Get your pen in hand, please. And Alan, please don't lose your train of thought here. Okay? The babies, okay?
Yep.
And the selective breeding. Okay, because when we get back, you may as well give them your address for your book, too.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petru, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petru, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
All right, we're back with Alan Watt. And folks, those of you who listen regularly are very aware that Alan has written three books. His third one is now being delivered. And I'm going to have Alan explain a little bit about the books and give you his address for those of you who would be interested. The reason I see these as so critical is that Alan gives us a lot of ancient history. And as he said over and over and over again, that it's the same thing has happened down throughout the ages. And for me, and I've believed that. I didn't disbelieve it at all. However, with the research that I've done these past couple weeks for these last past three chapters of the book, Jewish Persecution, which, by the way, you can read online at our website at sweetliberty.org. It's right on the main page. And these three chapters will be going over to Darren in the morning. But, Alan, I was explaining this to you. The research that I've done in all of the connections that have been made, and that there can be no denying that what you said about the U.S. being founded to bring in the final plan of the New World Order, the plan for world dominion, with all of the information that I discovered, there can be no denying it. And there's something different about believing it and actually knowing it. And it's sort of like taking a magnifying glass just to one little piece of history going back 200 years. And when you see the plan, besides the writers and the producers and directors and the actors and all of the intrigue and all of the machinations, you realize that this same plan or the same type of activity has, it's like a pattern that has gone on throughout the ages, right up to today, all over this whole planet. Mm-hmm. And it and your books take us way back there and help us literally to get out of the forest so we can see the trees. I guess that's what it is. Yeah. That's what I wanted to say about that. You want to, if there's anything else that you want to say, you go ahead.
Both Franklin and Jefferson made the same statement in their memoirs, and they both said that the Federation, or the Confederation of the United States, would lead to a confederation of the world, of the nations, under one government run by 12 wise men. Wise men, of course, in the Kabbalah, is the perfect number of government.
These
guys were steeped in Kabbalistic teachings.
And in Chaim Solomon's, one of his bios that I read, they said that it has been said that he wrote the Declaration of Independence, which is hogwash too, that he designed the Great Seal of the U.S., and that he always knew that America would be a world an empire or something like that.
Yes, and that's why, of course, Wolfowitz and the rest of these boys in that club have said that this is the new American century. They say there must be an empire. There's always been a world empire leader, and they are the new world empire leader. So that's they've almost achieved their goal, you see.
Yes, they have, and you know, I've thought about that with the John Birch Society's magazine, The New American.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if that's a code for them. mm-hmm. for New America, the New American Century?
Well, Birch is a Masonic term.
Well, Birch was a
Birch
Mason.
Ash, David Icke is oak in German. He's oak, you see, which is higher than the birch.
And, really?
So they use these trees for specific designations, and it's a warning to all Masons what they are, you know. Masons always have a little clue there through the names of societies and so on. Yeah.
You know, the Birch Society reprinted Berule's book. Mm-hmm. What the heck was the name of that book? You know, Abbey Berule,
mm-hmm.
The Secret Societies or whatever. And in the preface of the book, they had said that Freemasonry no longer is now benign and data. In other words, there's no power left in the Freemasonry. Welch, that was his name, right?
That's right.
Welch, what kind of a name is that?
Well, again, it's not from Britain. Put it that way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Welsh. It's Welch, C-H.
Yeah, is that a?
A lot of these names are abbreviated. They compact them. You'll hear the name Baruch, who was the banker. Now, a lot of them of the same name compacted it down to Burke, for instance.
Oh.
So Welch is like Willach or Willash, and so they compact it down to. That's what they do with a lot of these names.
Uh-huh. Are you having a storm there?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
They're still spraying. It's building up to it, though.
I just heard it's almost cracking like lightning in the
There may be, yeah.
headset
there
here.
May be, further south.
Well, tell our listeners about your books and how they can get them.
Yes, there's three of them, and I call them Cutting Through. And there's one, two, and three. Each one is $25, which includes everything. And if you send, you can either send the cash, the money, the paper money, wrapped in foil is the best way to do it.
Or an
international postal order from your post office, that also does. It has to be international. One or two people did send me internal ones, and they can't cash them here. And if you send it to this address, which is Alan Watt, which is W-A-T-T, and it's Site 41, S-I-T-E, 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada, and the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. And I'll get it back to you as soon as I can.
And you do recommend if they're only getting one book and they don't have the first one, they should get the first one first.
Yeah, I'll lead them through the Masonic steps.
Right.
And leading up to the final one, which is a lot of ancient history to do with the same takeover techniques with the money boys and so on in ancient times. Through what records remain, and you can see how incredibly precise this higher masonry is. There's nothing slipshod about it. It's a science, a definite science. So much so that your whole language has been created and masonically encoded in the 1500s when they updated English from the old German Saxon to what we call English today. And Francis Bacon, who helped to do that, and he talked about it, he says, we are creating the international language of the future, which will be called English. We had a whole team of priests basically working on the creation of the English language, and Shakespeare worked with them too, and Shakespeare, through his plays, introduced, I can't remember how many thousands of words, over, I think, 100,000 new words into the English language.
Is that right?
Basically, they created the English language.
Well, why are they making the big deal today about everybody having to learn Spanish, like here in the U.S.?
Well, it's simply for the U.S. to have more friction.
Okay.
They're building up internal friction within the United States on purpose. and then they'll pass laws which will come down on everyone, and then they'll come up with all the solutions to it.
Mm-hmm.
They've done the same in Canada. You have French and English. They've tried this in different countries, so they know how to create friction very easily.
Yeah, so one of the things
Getting back, though, to the health.
Okay, but just one second. One of the things that you didn't say is that you cannot accept personal checks either.
That's right, yeah.
You cannot cash personal checks or U.S. postal money orders. And, folks, I just wanted to make that clear. So make sure that either you send the cash, the FRNs, the slave credits, or the International Postal Money Order, which, as Alan said, you can get at your post office. Otherwise, he can't use it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, getting back to the Hellfire Club and the babies that they found under the floor.
In the 1700s and right up to today in some very high clubs, they had brothels attached to them. Now, these weren't normal brothels in the usual sense. They did have ones for women who worked regularly, you might say, but they also had the higher prostitutes who were very high-class prostitutes with certain genetic lines in their blood, basically, in their genes. And in the Hellfire Club, when Franklin was a member, the top one there was Madame Bouvier. And she
that was related to Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy?
That's right. And in fact, there's two of them still alive today, two of the Bouviers in France, two sisters. And they were highly sought after. And if you could serve the system well of Masonry to further the revolutionary cause towards the global governance by this intellectual elite, then you contributed to science. That's why they all tried to get their names in the science books. Then you were allowed to mate with one of these high women, and the offspring then was trained and brought up as a tongue-in-cheek orphan, the widow's son, you call it, and he would be trained for high office, either in bureaucracy or politics. So this still goes on today, and there's this talk even that Bill Clinton was one of these, and that his father was one of the Rockefellers,
yes.
But his mother definitely was a high-class Madame Bouvier type who went to the very wealthy parties all over Europe and America.
Oh, she wasn't the lowly maid?
Oh, no. No, she went to very expensive parties and traveled extensively.
You know, I was wondering about this Lafayette. In his bio, they said that his father died when he was 2 years old, and then 11 years later, his mother and grandfather died, leaving him immensely wealthy, and he was trained at the military school there, and by the age of 16, I mean, he was a professional soldier, and it made me wonder, when the mother and grandfather died 11 years later, if it was a natural death or an accident. Or were they taken out of the picture so their minion could have that kind of wealth?
Well, it's that, and it's also to cover the fact that they have brought up these children with one training, and that's expertise in the martial war.
Yeah.
Napoleon was also raised for that exact same purpose. And when they came out with the first Declaration of Rights in France, they also said that we think that a man may come out of Corsica, where Napoleon was born and raised. A man might come out of Corsica and lead the revolution to glory. And of course, Napoleon came along, and he was steeped from the age of five onwards in nothing but warfare and warfare techniques. So they train them specially for their function in life. So it's quite fascinating.
I thought he came in after the revolution.
Yeah, he did, but the revolution was failing. The mountain, as they call it, the old Masons, the older elders, they were all formed a huge part of the government. We're always arguing with the younger ones, and Napoleon stepped in and took it over.
I see.
And He literally didn't change just France. He changed every country that he went into.
Well, he must have ticked them off because they vilify him.
Oh, they vilified him in one sense, but another sense, he did much more. He did what he was supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
He helped unify other countries into larger countries.
Uh-huh.
That's part of the ongoing war program.
Yep.
Is to get small, like the Soviet Union did. They took all these small countries and incorporated them, and then gave them the exact same system of money, education, bureaucracy, and so on, until you couldn't really tell them apart. So Napoleon did help to unify a lot of the countries, small, tiny countries, into larger ones, and that led up, of course, to the First World War. Step by step, it's all going in the same direction.
Yeah.
And now you have a united Europe, which was also Napoleon's dream. And it was also Winston Churchill's dream. So that was part of it. Karl Marx talked about a united Europe, a Pacific Rim conglomerate, and a united Americas. And he wrote about that in the 1840s and said they'd all be under a super world government. So this is nothing new. It's all been put out there. It just isn't taught much at all, if at all, in schools, you know. But the books are there in the universities. Yeah. So it's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
And the United States is simply finishing off the task. And as it finishes off the task, its standards of living must come down to meet those of the rest of the world, which is being leveled. You know.
They're leveling the playing ground, the playing field. Yeah, that was
you see, a country which cannot feed itself, number one, and the farming is basically going right out the window in Canada and the States, can't feed itself. It has no industry to even rearm if they had to by themselves. Is no longer a nation, really. In other words, they're helpless.
You know,
we need the international system now.
There was somebody evidently on Fox News Network,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know who it was, but I did get the email and the interview, and I skimmed it. And this Yo-Yo said on Fox News that he's expecting within 90 days something another terrible attack on the U.S. He said, I don't know if it had something. By the way, there is an article, and I know that I checked it out myself from the Navy Times. The title of the article was Uncle Sam Wants You, Even If You're 42 Years Old. And that was the article from the Navy Times. I went and got it. And then there was, I think, New York Times article, and said that the Pentagon was calling for raising the age on recruiting to age 42, Alan.
Yes, and they had a blurb on one newscast that had actually taken in undertakers, recruited them, called them into duty, and I think they were close to the age of 60.
Yeah, undertakers.
Yep.
That would be to take care of all the dead bodies?
Yeah, the U.S., according to the BBC, and the BBC in Canada, is having a tough enough job just policing Iraq. And they want to go into Iran, Syria, and so on. So they must have trouble in all the other countries that are going to help them, to motivate them to help them.
Yep.
And that's why you're having all this trouble in London and so on.
Yep.
If you were a true terrorist, you would sit back, because Tony Blair and his cabinet were ready to get kicked out of Parliament after all the inquiries, which were out in the open. And about all the lies he told to get the public to go along with the war. So he was on his way out. And then the week following the bombing was scheduled to be mass demonstrations in the streets against the ID card. And why would the terrorists go and help Tony Blair? Because off go the bombs. He's back up on the podium again. We're here to protect you. He's in charge. He's the man of the moment. And out goes the ID to the public. They're getting it. And
the real ID, like we got here?
It's the same company that's manufacturing it for all the, well, for the world.
Yeah.
And it's an active chip inside it, and you must carry it at all times, and has your health on it, everything. Plus, it will be used, they have said, for your bank card.
Oh, wow. It's
part of the cashless society. That's out in the open over there.
Oh, wow.
So they'll monitor everyone's transactions. This is total observation.
Yeah, and folks, if you have internet access, or if you don't, you can always go to a library and get online. If you go to sweetliberty.org and you go to the issues sections, and you'll find that on the main page. As you scroll down a little ways, there's a drop-down box, and it says don't miss our issues sections. That's where all the information is stored. And you hit that little arrow, and it drops down a box, and all of the different issues that are listed there have articles relating to that particular. And you'll find shadow government, or you can do a search on our website, search for shadow government. You can go into that section, and there's a piece there titled New Order of the Barbarians. I've talked about it before. In fact, a long time ago, I read most of it to our listeners. And this insider, Dr. Richard Day, this was back in the earlier mid-60s, speaking to a group of pediatric physicians in Pittsburgh, was telling how they were going to bring all this about. It's absolutely amazing. Dr. Lawrence Dunnigan, who I believe just recently passed away, was a pediatrician, one of the attendees. And Dr. Day told them that several years ago, he wouldn't have been able to tell them what he was going to tell them that night. But he said everything is in place and nothing can stop us now. We are going to go in to the 21st century with a running start, he said, and this time we're going to get it right. And he goes into detail about what they're going to do. That's what sparked this thought in my mind, Alan, about the cashless society, how they'll do it, and how close the track they'll be keeping. And when you read this, you will have no doubt that this was told by an insider. It wasn't somebody who made it up. He even talked about the people who believed that they could run and hide, Alan, and maybe go out and live in the woods or something. He said, we'll burn the forest down. Mm-hmm. And what the heck are they doing today, Alan?
I know. The Ministry of Natural Resources had a documentary on with the Forestry Commission. And it's so interesting. I always laugh at the theories as they swap from the complete opposite theory, and the opposite becomes the new norm. And now the guys who used to fight the fires, the new theory is that they should set the fires. And of course, British Columbia had over 3,000 fires last year, and a lot of people lost their homes in it. And the ministry is now starting these supposed control burns, which have a habit of getting out of control. That is the new norm now.
Yep.
And I notice that none of the animal rights activists are even talking about this, which doesn't surprise me.
Right.
Because think of all the animals that are getting killed and roasted in these fires.
Well, and part of the insanity of that is I recall a terrible, this was quite a few years ago in California, and some people were burning brush around their homes, you know, to make a firewall. And these people were fined because there was some kind of a mouse that lived in that kind of brush.
I know.
Yeah, uh-huh. And these people were actually fined for setting the fires that wound up protecting their home from the forest fires. And yet, like you said, they're burning all these forests down and many animals with it, and these animal-loving organizations aren't saying a damned word.
Well, the willing fools, and it's only their leaders who know the real agenda, but the willing fools are just another class of sheep,
yep.
Like religious people. They do what their leaders tell them, and that's why they're not protesting. That their leader is just like the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was run by NGOs, primarily women, and I've got that firsthand from a lot of people from the Soviet Union. And they were all handpicked by the Politburo, all the leaders of these NGOs. And it's exactly the same here. The Rockefeller Foundation I know for a fact, because one woman works for them, and her job is to write checks to these NGOs. That's all she does. Thousands of checks. And the Rockefeller Foundation is backing most of them, and along with that comes the Rockefeller policy.
Yep.
You accept the money, accept the policy.
That's right. And the NGOs...
The recipes.
And the NGOs, in one of the UN's writings that I have, they're talking about the UN becoming a true world parliament, mm-hmm. and that the only thing that was missing was the voice of the people, and then basically what came down to is that the NGOs are the voice of the people.
That's
and to
right.
use an example of that, the, everybody joins it. When you own a business. Oh, shoot. I went through this the other day talking about this with somebody, and the name escaped me. It's local. Chambers of Commerce, Alan.
Okay.
It's one of the oldest NGOs. It's international, and of course, then it's national, and then of course it's state, and then it's local. And I was a member of the Chamber of Commerce for years when I owned my business, until I found out that they were promoting the NAFTA, and I was beginning to wake up, and I got out of it. But when you think about the millions of people who are members of the Chamber of Commerce, and there's the Chamber of Commerce at the international level speaking out for all of the UN programs, they take this, that all of the millions of people that are members of the Chamber of Commerce, the Chamber is speaking for those people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Parliament of the People, are the NGOs.
That's right.
And we are out of our hour. And Alan, thank you. You know what? I don't know, maybe you'll come back tomorrow night. You know what entered my mind as you were talking? As the hermaphrodites, when you mentioned women.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a conversation about that, and I think it would be very interesting for our listeners. And so maybe we could pick that up tomorrow night.
Sure.
Okay, thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. And God bless you. And have a lovely evening, folks. Have a nice day tomorrow. Alan, thank you. Good night. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
What do you know about the FTAA?